Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking this hour with Denise Ross. You might know her as one of SDPB's Dakota political junkies. She's a South Dakota journalist, and she's currently undergoing treatment for stage 4 breast cancer. We've been talking about cancer and nutrition and the things people say to you when they find out you have cancer, some of which are not as helpful as you might think. Let's get back to our conversation with Denise as we explore DNA editing and the role of hope in fighting cancer and the notion of how life changes when you cross the threshold, especially when battling a cancer that is considered terminal. When was the first time, so you're diagnosed at 41, does it hit you right away? I mean, do you make that attachment with the word cancer immediately?
You know,
or does it take a while to sink in?
And this, it takes a while. And this sounds as crazy and absurd to me now as it will sound to everybody listening to this, but I had to have a mastectomy. At the time I was diagnosed, I had stage 3 cancer. It had gotten into 4 lymph nodes, one of which had broken open. And so that's the stage 3 part right there. So I was consulting with a surgeon who was going to do the mastectomy, and she said, and then I'll refer you to an oncologist. And my thought in my head was, I don't need an oncologist. It was like, well, yeah, I have cancer, but I don't have cancer. Like, I don't know, but it just, right. I guess you can only absorb so much at a time.
Yeah.
And that was the thought that was going through my head. Like, why am I going to an oncologist? Which, of course, you need one. It's a process. And like I said, that first time through it, I had a recurrence in early 2015. So now I'm stage 4. That first time through, I just kind of went through my 6 chemo treatments. I had a week of radiation, had my surgery was first, and then kind of went on and didn't change my diet and didn't do a whole lot. I had always exercised, right. So I continued to do that. And it wasn't that I ate completely terribly, but I just, didn't pay that much attention to it. And now I'm much more diligent about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now you've gone through how many clinical trials? I mean, you've gone through so many different ways of coming at this cancer. From lifestyle adjustments to surgery to chemotherapy to clinical trials. Tell me a little bit about the clinical trial piece.
I've been on 2 different clinical trials, one very recently at the Mayo Clinic that I've now switched off of. And I'm doing kind of an old-fashioned chemo treatment, which I've only had one treatment of so far. But it was this fancy new drug that everybody was super, super excited about, from my doctor there to the pharmacist who brought me my little bottle of pills, and everybody was really excited. Well, it didn't work on me, but it was they've known about this particular pathway for some 20 years in mice, but they couldn't figure out how to work it out in humans. This is the first drug they think they figured out how to deliver the drug to human cancer, and it disrupts, this gets really into the weeds, but it disrupts the lipids that cancer cells need to replicate.
Okay.
That's what it's supposed to do. So I tried that for a few weeks, and then they could see that it wasn't going anywhere. So they switched me to this other chemo, which there are signs that that is working to beat the cancer back. So we'll find out for sure in the middle of June with a scan. So just kind of wait and see.
Yeah. What's the role of hope for you?
It's really important. There are times when you do lose hope, but I'll tell you this, especially for anybody that's in stage 4 out there, that stage 4 is considered terminal, but there are testimonials all over the internet and books at the bookstore of people who've had stage 4 cancer, and through, and a lot of it is pushing this lifestyle stuff, different nutrition, different foods, different concoctions, but claim that their cancer has gone away, and that they've remained cancer-free for several years. I think, real. There's a TED Talk out there about, this is what I'm doing right now, is these anti-angiogenesis foods, and these are foods that work together to prevent and to erase the blood vessels that have formed around tumors and cancer cells. That's why I say nutrition matters. I mean, you can really, really affect things. And so Harvard is now studying this particular phenomenon in these particular foods. But that's just a study that's pretty recently opened. So we'll see what their research shows probably in a year or two.
How much research do you do as a journalist? How fully, I mean, when it's you and you're facing it, do you fully throw yourself in and say, I'm going to do all the research I can? Or do you sit back and say, at some point, that's not healthy and I have to, you know, just go to the doctor and listen?
Yeah, well, I have some news alerts set up through Google, so I keep track of certain, studies and clinical trials and that kind of thing. So I'm kind of up on what's happening. Of course, the hot ticket is immunotherapy, and particularly the role that this really new phenomenon that affects everything from agriculture to human disease and in between, CRISPR, which was the 2015 scientific breakthrough of the year, but it's DNA editing technology, and they seem to be advancing very rapidly on that. But that plays a role in immunotherapy and cancer as well. And to me, it seems like you could deploy it directly at some point where it just goes in and gets the DNA of the cancer cells and just kind of zaps it. But
in the
that's not here yet.
The final days or months of the Obama administration, I remember Joe Biden and the cancer moonshot and the sort of call to, and the thing that I, Kara Hetland, SDPB's Kara Hetland, host of Innovation, did a story on this. And I remember getting actively anger working up that because there was the sense that what Joe Biden was saying was that scientists and we're not working together and that because of the way research is shared, we could do so much more. And I thought, well, if you know, how close are we to knowing things that we could be implementing and saving lives right now because of, lack of funds or lack of coordination or lack of execution. Do you get encouraged by the research? Do you get frustrated because you know that you could be on a timeline and the time could matter very importantly in a very personal way.
We can do in the next 5 years what would ordinarily take 10. And think of what that will mean. Think of how many people you know who are saying, you docs who are saying, Doc, I just want to make it one more month to see my daughter get married. Doc, if I can just make it another 4 months, I'll be able to pay off the house and my wife will be okay when I go. Doc, all I want to do is see my daughter graduate. These are real life things. Time matters. Days matter. Minutes matter.
About how the research is conducted and should everybody and their big, science brains focus on this really promising area. But, if you think about all this big scientific discoveries of the past, like let's say penicillin, where this one guy in his lab, accidentally made penicillin and figured out how it worked.
Right.
I've come to accept that the sort of scattershot approach probably makes sense, in that you're pursuing lots of different lines of inquiry at once and you're going to avoid groupthink in that way. And you're likely to find more, there's a little bit of competitive spirit there and you're just kind of likely to find more. But I understand the frustration of why aren't we all working on the most promising thing?
Well, and
I've
mean
had
like,
that feeling myself,
Yeah, like with the data sharing and the algorithms and the things that, artificial intelligence could be applied to, that, that you could speed things up just by sharing the thing that you're doing in your little corner. That's, that's the thing I'm wondering about, where the breakthroughs might come through in data sharing.
There is a recognition that by aggregating and sharing data of millions of patients, including genomics, family history, lifestyle, treatment outcomes, we have the potential to find new patterns and causes and successfully treat cancer in ways we never did before. We can now do 1,000 billion calculations per second. It changes the world, potentially, is the what with aggregated data, we can learn. Now we have the capability to do it. Advanced technology, the supercomputing, allow us to analyze enormous amounts of data to find answers that we couldn't do 5 years ago. It would take scores and scores and scores of experts, years pouring over to find similar patterns. And there's new hope. New treatment like immunotherapies, training the immune system to track cancer cells, more accurate radiation therapies, which target cancer cells, but do less damage to the healthy cells, transforming many of the types of cancer into chronic and manageable diseases, when 10 years ago, they were literally a death sentence. But in my view, to seize the moment, to seize this inflection point, we have to improve how we work together and get this all within our reach. One of the biggest problems we have, in my view, to solve is treatments need to be affordable. We need a strong continuum of generating and using knowledge to fight cancer, and we have to change the entire path, in my view, of how knowledge goes from small labs to pharmaceutical companies to production facilities. And the cost of life-saving drugs are astronomical. We have to come up with a better way. What is the possible justification? When a drug, a life-saving drug, is brought to market, at the time it's brought to market, it costs $26,000 a year, and 15 years later, it costs $120,000. Tell me, what is the justification for that?
You know, that's kind of beyond my pay grade.
Me too.
I don't know how much there is of that going on. Yeah. I can tell you there are conferences.
Yeah.
Multiple times every year, conferences where they go and what they call poster sessions, which is kind of a sneak peek from one scientist to another of here's how our research has shown so far, but it's not anything that's been published yet in a journal or a paper or anything like that.
Right.
So if there's news about, and that comes up in my Google News alert, so there's this particular conference, so-and-so is going to present a poster session on this, mm-hmm. and then you can actually, after the conference, pull up the posters if you know how to Google really well and kind of see what the research shows. And I get a little bit out of that. I'm sure the people with the formal training get more out of it. But yeah, so they do share, at least in that way, and that's in a human way too, where they can ask questions and talk to each other. So
yeah,
you know, there's that, some of that going on.
Tell me, you know, a lot of people call us, you know, with the books that they've written about cancer treatment and, you know, therapies, and some of them involve, you know, the art therapy or the role of music in healing. And I'm wondering what mm-hmm. has that been something that you have, or any of the sort of, it's not alternative, but there's a different word, you know, mm-hmm. sort of integrative way of looking at things.
Integrative medicine.
Not that you're not
going
to see your oncologist, but that you would incorporate some of these complementary—that's the word I'm looking for—modes of healing. Has that been something that's effective for you?
Well, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
But of course, I feel better when I'm outdoors and in nature. So I just feel like I'm listening to my body a little bit if I go out and spend some time and just take an extra minute or two to soak in a particular place I might be.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the social interaction, the just not being too stressed out. And that's another thing. You know, I talked to you a little bit about facing mortality and how that's a unique experience as I compared to, in a way, to getting married, where once you've kind of gone over that threshold and you look back at the other people who haven't, there's a certain amount of experience that just doesn't translate over that. And the same way with having children. And it's the same thing with facing your mortality, which I've encountered. When I say you do kind of lose hope at certain points, there's been a few times where I thought, this is it, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you do that, I mean, when you really believe that the end is near, and then you're able to come back from that, things don't bother you as much, and you're more sympathetic towards other people, and if you don't get somewhere on time, you don't, you know, get so stressed out about that or whatever it is. And it's not anything conscious, like I'm just not going to worry about that. And you tell yourself that, you just don't worry about that.
Right.
And kind of think, well, oh, well.
Is that something that you learned in sort of the rock tumbler of cancer, where this, you know, the ragged edges smoothed away? Or do you look back now and say, you know, I had this mental resilience coming into this, And it has served me well throughout.
If I was to be honest, it probably had the resilience coming into it.
Right.
And it wasn't something that I really ever wanted to define me. You know, I didn't want to have that be me. I wanted to still be me and go do my things and have my life, of course. And of course, everyone wants that, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it too, you know, where you just think, well, I'm just going to keep going. And but there is a one day at a time aspect to it too. You know, you never know how you're going to feel for sure on a given day. You never know how a certain treatment's going to affect you. And you just have to kind of roll with it. And it forces you to do that. And which I wouldn't, you know, there's certain things I just wouldn't do. Like I have pretty much quit working and I'm home with my kids a lot, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, if I didn't have cancer, I probably wouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And I think, wow, I'm kind of grateful for that little piece of it now at this, you know, every day that I get to have with my boys. So.
Right. You're listening to a conversation about cancer. My guest is Denise Ross, one of SDPB's Dakota political junkies. We'll be back with more after the break on listener-supported SDPB.